Kevin McCullough, glad to be back with you. You know, every day we talk about the things that are on the front page and kind of how they impact what we see, what we believe, how we live, and why all that matters. But every now and then I'm really privileged to set that aside and to talk to some of the people that I think are helping to shape the character and psyche of America. And sometimes they're reshaping it. Sometimes they're taking it in different directions. And the impact that my next guest has made to the American dialogue is primarily viewed, at least normally, through the lens of the culture in a very specific prism, because she is an African-American female. But when you understand the universality of what she's talking about, you begin to understand that every person in America is impacted by the things that she is most passionate about. And as she is fighting in her lane about issues that impact people that she cares about very much, that actually she's lifting the whole of America to a higher place, a greater sense of enlightenment, and certainly a greater direction from God himself. Her name is Candace Owens, and the new book is called Blackout, How Black America Can Make Its Second Escape from the Democrat Plantation. Candace, it's an honor to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
When you wake up in the morning, you see a lot of not-so-nice things written about you, usually from the political and cultural left in America. But in the last number of weeks, and I would say specifically since the conventions, I am noticing something that I think is very intriguing. It's something that I kind of predicted, I don't know, January, February of this year. I think that Donald Trump on November 3rd is going to garner the largest amount of black vote in GOP modern era history. And I'm curious if, from where you sit with the Blexit debate and the walk away and the things that you're involved in the African-American community in North America, are you sensing the same thing? Have enough eyes been opened that people are saying, you know what, we deserve a better chance than what we've been given doing things the same way one more time, and Donald Trump's the guy that's going to do it for us?
Yeah, you know, Donald Trump was my conversion story, and when he won in 2016, I immediately knew that this was going to be the person that was going to crack the black vote, and I have been calling it for the last 3 years that it's going to be 20 points in 2020. I think Donald Trump will secure 20% of the black vote, which people would have thought would have been impossible. But his particular character is what's doing it, and what I mean by that is Donald Trump, he just has more spine than the Republicans that we're used to in terms of standing up to the slander and the libel of the media and the press. In the past, when a white American conservative gets called racist, they sort of shrink under the pressure of that, and they usually remain quiet or move on from it, where Donald Trump fights and he doubles down. And that's an incredibly unusual reaction to have, but it is exactly the character that was needed to address black America, to say, I've said what I said and I'm not taking it back, and here is why I said it. And we saw that from the very beginning. I saw that in him when he said, Black America, what do you have to lose? And the media attempted to spin those comments that he said in Michigan, the Dimmondale, Michigan, that he said that those comments in 2015, and they said he was a racist, and he never backed down from it. And he still says that same sentence now when speaking in front of audiences that are majority African-American. He says, I asked you in 2016, what did you have to lose? And so I definitely think that we are going to see, it is going to shock people when you look at the exit polling in this upcoming election.
I think that you're exactly right. And we are seeing it already in some of the polling. Like I said, since the conventions, I've counted five national polls, three of them likely voter polls, that have his support in the African-American community between 19% and 26%. And I think you're right. I think 20% is a very doable thing. And given the fact that that's almost like a double impact on the Democrat bottom line, because when you take a vote away from Democrats in the black community, they are so dependent upon black turnout. And I'm just curious, Candace, as you are around people in this final stretch towards the election, What are African Americans saying about Donald Trump's America, even in spite of COVID, even in spite of the riots that are occurring right now? What are people saying about why they're supporting the president?
Because they're finally being able to think outside of their emotions, and they're realizing really what Donald Trump has done the best is that he's broken the media simulation. He's challenged the media, right? And with the media entirely against him, and the media has always been able to control the narrative, and people are starting to see that the media does have its own nefarious goals, that they cannot give him credit for anything, right? I mean, there's no president ever that wasn't given credit for doing some good, and yet we have the leftist media that refuses to acknowledge if he's done any good. I mean, even today, he's up for a Nobel Peace Prize. He's been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. And what's trending on Twitter? Adolf Hitler, right? Because they can't just say, wow, this was actually amazing. He did broker this peace deal. No matter how much I hate him, I have to say this was good. So their delusion and their inability to even acknowledge that he's done some good has actually awakened Black Americans to the fact that, okay, I may have been caught in a media simulation, and let me actually look at this man objectively. Let me look at what he's done. They promised us that when he was elected, if he was elected, that we would be sent back in chains to Africa. We'd be, you know, picking cotton tomorrow. I mean, this was really the sort of ridiculous language that was being used in 2016, right? You know, vote or else. And none of that's happened, right? What's really happened is you've seen a community that has largely been lifted up. You know, before coronavirus, which to me is, you know, interesting timing, you know, you had Black Americans that were getting off of welfare, getting off of food stamps, all Americans getting jobs, the lowest ever unemployment rate for Black Americans. And this is amazing stuff. And people are starting to realize that Donald Trump doesn't see white or black. He only sees green, as I say. He likes money, he likes success, and he wants everyone to be a winner. And if you have a winner mentality, this is your America, and you're a part of it. Right. If you have a loser mentality, you know, this isn't the president for you.
Well, this unveils a lot of really interesting cultural inconsistencies, and I'd like to touch on some of those for a little bit. Because when you bring up the jobs numbers, when you bring up the wage growth, particularly pre-COVID, for the lowest one-third of wage earners and the amount of increase they were seeing in such a short period of time, when you look at over the fact that pre-COVID, his job growth was almost out, he was almost set to outpace Barack Obama's entire 8 years. In the first 4 years, he was at about 7 million jobs created. But now with the last 4 months of job creation, he's sitting at close to 18 million jobs, which is Bill Clinton was kind of usually looked at as the biggest job grower, 18.6 million over 8 years. This is really the guy, through deregulation and tax reform and making everything a lot more fair on the playing field, has now allowed, even in the face of this COVID problem, to really have a comeback possible. And I think people do want to be associated with winning. I think they do want to be part of the comeback. And I love that mentality. But Candace, and you know better than anyone because you talk about it. And by the way, the book is called Blackout, How Black America Can Make Its Second Escape from the Democrat Plantation. When you look at what the other alternative is in this election cycle, I don't know that I've seen a more blatantly, at least racially insensitive kind of candidate than Joe Biden. And certainly one that if Donald Trump were saying the exact same things that have come out of Joe Biden's mouth, that there wouldn't be a media lynching going on to write him out of town. Now, help me explain how, even with the bumbling, stumbling Joe Biden, that there's going to be even 80% of Black Americans that are going to hang on to that that party and that idea and that candidate regardless.
You know, that's an interesting question. You know, 20% was almost like my goal, and I wouldn't be shocked if Trump blew that. But I will say this about just Black culture right now. Joe Biden is the first candidate that they are not endorsing. They have all been very open. I mean, they the hip hop shows, you know, they all have to do the rounds on the hip hop shows, have been for the first time ever really standing up to Joe Biden's record on race and talking about his record on race. And that's extremely unusual because usually you have the Black community in lockstep. It's Democrats is who we vote for. But they're uncomfortable with him because he has made so many racial blunders currently today and also in his past. You know, Joe Biden was first and foremost his mentor, which just never gets enough airtime, was the Cyclops, the Grand Wizard of the KKK. when he, and he, you know, eulogized him at his funeral. Then you have the fact that he supported segregation. He thought that forced integration was going to be bad for the country, and it was quoted saying that this is what Black Americans want, that we wanted separate schools, that we wanted segregation, which is, of course, was pointedly ridiculous given the civil rights era and all that we fought for. So he has a problematic record on race, and he's not reformed himself from that in his language today, and his views of Black Americans as all sort of just being, having one sweeping idea. He really does view Black Americans as a monolith. So, I mean, I'm interested to see what happens. I mean, it's you know, let's not forget Kanye West is registered in 13 states. I think you'll get a lot of Black Americans that are just hitting the Kanye West button because they don't want to vote for Trump, but they don't like Biden. So I think really in modern times, this is going to be the most fascinating election to take a look at in terms of the exit polls.
No, I think that it's going to be historic, and I think that historians will write about it and study it for a long time to come. And I think part of that has to do, Candace, too, with the economic opportunities that people are being given, because with the even in the shadow of the pandemic, the deregulation and the tax reform policies have allowed entrepreneurialism to take hold in a way that we've only seen a handful of times in American history. And Black business owners in particular are benefiting from that. What does this tell you about the future of Black America as more Black small business owners are moving into that middle to upper class category and actually becoming employers and employing people all on their own, as opposed to being considered as a class of people largely dependent upon government?
And I think what it really shows you is that when Black Americans are handed the keys to their future, when Black Americans become more confident, when, as a whole, of course, there are plenty of Black Americans that are embracing their futures and work really hard and do well. But when, as a whole, the Black community is uplifted and no longer has to rely on government handouts and no longer thinks that they're less than because you have a media that's constantly harping on the idea that Black Americans, because of the color of your skin, you're disadvantaged, which is actually teaching racism, you are going to see a Black America that is ready to step inside of this American dream that stops looking at color. That's what happens when you find success. You realize that this country was really founded on principles and ideas, and what connects each American is this willingness that, you know, as an American culture, if you come here with the clothes on your back, you can make something of yourself. That is the American dream. That's what immigrants are fighting to get into America because of. That is the American philosophy. And I think that what we're seeing more and more is Black Americans and other minority groups stepping inside of that and saying, I want this for my future. And Donald Trump is offering that.
When you think about the challenges that people are facing in Democrat wholly owned cities, Baltimore, New York, Seattle, Portland, Chicago, Detroit, Philly, you can list them off almost as easily as they can come to mind. And you look at the needed reforms that need to make a difference there. What are the top priorities that you think need to occur? Is it socially and culturally related? Is it economic? Is it primarily economically related? What's the biggest top two or three things you would like to see begin to change in those cities to begin to see that uplifting that you're describing?
Well, you know, I would say there's a two-prong approach. We definitely need the government to get out of lives. You know, I'm a big believer in welfare reform, and obviously, you know, Larry Elder, who is a mentor to me, he talks a lot about father absence and how the welfare industry has further perpetuated that, incentivizes that every single day, and how everything falls apart once you remove a father from the home. But, you know, another element of that is that we have a culture right now in Black America that celebrates depravity. Right. We have a culture that celebrates gangs through our music, violence, all of these things. And this is what our youth is growing up with. And it was not like this a few short decades ago. And I talk about that in my book. A chapter called On Culture. You know, when I was growing up in my granddaddy's house, he was listening to The Temptations, Diana Ross. I mean, these were men that were dressed in suits, you know, that were singing about family and love and these uplifting things. So this was sort of the things that was training the Black mind. These were the goals. They were setting the aspirations. Today, we don't have that. that Zimmer movement has been replaced with the more gutter culture that seeks to be more and more depraved. And until Black America is willing to have an honest discussion about that and say, you know what, we need to start rejecting this. We need to say this is not what we want on our television. We don't want women to have less clothes. That's not freedom. That's bondage, right? We're not going to start seeing changes. So I would say number one, obviously, would be father absence. I think Larry Elder hit the nail on the head. But number two would be culture. Number two would be once you allow the fathers to be back in the home and allow the family to raise the kids, you can remove this idea that Jay-Z and Beyonce should be mom and dad or king and queen. And that's really important to making sure that we protect the fabric of America and Black American culture.
What I don't hear you saying is that we need to send more government checks to single moms.
The exact opposite. The exact opposite. You know, we need people. We have people that are literally fighting to be impoverished because they want to keep their government checks. Yeah. Because it's impossible for them to get their head above the water. And it's the welfare system is just patently built, to just disrupt success. And it needs to go away. Abolish it, you know.
Let me ask you another, super easy question. The issue of the riots and the violence in America right now, if you speak out against it, you're told, particularly as a white talk show host, you're told that if you speak out against the violence, that you must be racially insensitive. And if you don't call it a peaceful protest, then you are in some way wanting to keep Black people down, or that you want to protect corrupt police officers. Police officers have done bad things. The man that killed George Floyd, I think, should, if proven guilty, he should go away. But I also am very confused by the message that says that criticizing this violence and the destruction of property, and, oh, by the way, the killing of 35 innocent people in these protests since then, mostly African Americans, isn't also somehow hypocritical in the discussion. Candace, from your perspective, what should we be thinking as we see this violence on our TVs at night and we hear a media telling us basically only one version of the narrative?
You know, this kind of reminds me of like those crazy parents who believe that you should never reprimand your child, and imagine going into a classroom and a bunch of toddlers are screaming and painting on the wall and throwing things down. And there's like this, you know, that very small sect of parents who, like, they're expressing themselves. They need to do this. That's what the media has become. They're coddling and they're infantilizing Black America. And they're perpetuating a culture where having a toddler syndrome, throwing things, breaking things, looting, taking things that are not yours, needs to be allowed because of some past oppressions and some anger that can only be resolved if you're ruining somebody else's personal belongings. And, you know, the only thing to do is to stand up to it and tell the truth. And I always say, you can't say the biggest perpetuators of this is Black Lives Matter and the media. It's also white people that don't have the spine to speak up and call this wrong. You know, illness, this plague of white guilt where I just better be quiet because I don't understand and I could never understand all of this stuff. You do understand what toddler behavior is. You do understand the difference between right and wrong. You don't need to racialize.
Anybody that has kids certainly does, for sure. I mean,
my
5-year-old knows exactly what this is about.
Right, exactly. And so I put that challenge on white Americans, you know, to start saying, I don't stand with this. I don't stand with this corruption. I don't stand with this rioting and this looting. And, you know, you may have something valid to say, but you need to say it, not act it. Right. And if that's how you feel, you want to be an ally by allowing people to disrupt businesses and trash the economy because they're upset about something that happened in a city and a state that's thousands and thousands of miles away from you. You're going to wake up one day and you're not going to have your country.
Yeah. Her book is called Blackout, How Black America Can Make Its Second Escape from the Democrat Plantation. Her name is Candace Owens. If you're just joining us, you no doubt recognize her voice. Candace, let me move to Capitol Hill. You've had some pretty legendary viral moments in front of committees in Congress. Do you enjoy that moment? Is there a certain degree of satisfaction when they kind of fall for the bait and they ask you a stupid question that you can just really reel back and say, guys, let me show you how to think here, and then lay it out logically? I mean, I gotta admit, some of those moments that you've had in some of those YouTube highlights that are going around social media. I have dozens of friends that are like, man, this girl is sharp. She's on it. And I just love to see her do that. Is it as much fun doing it as it appears to be?
In the moment, I'm usually just on fire. And so, you know, I'm like just lasers coming out of my eyes and I'm super focused on it, going after whichever person has gone after me, particularly the second one with ranking chairman Jamie Raskin. That was a really little guy in person, by the way. He's like 4 feet. Right. Because what really bothers me, but then when I walk away, I'm so satisfied because, you know, the audacity of these politicians to sit up there and Jerry Nadler with their gavels and hammering around, they need to be brought down to reality. They, in fact, they shouldn't even be positioned in a way where they're above us. We should be sitting above them. These congressional people work for us, not the other way around, right? Mm. You know, they work for us, and they have somehow been deluded into believing that they're somehow better than us, or they have a right to treat us or try to be rude to us, and it's really gotten out of hand. So it feels really good, you know, to go in and to disrupt the narrative that they're trying to play a part in, you know, that white people are all horrible and black people are all suffering, and to give them and to give it back to them, because what they're doing right now is trying to destroy our nation. We've elected these people, and what they are after is the destruction of America. It's so backwards and it's so wrong. And if it takes just, you know, a citizen off the streets like me to come in and tell them what's right and what's wrong, I'm more than happy to do it.
Well, and I feel like it's kind of a classic moment. Who was the coach for the Green Bay Packers that he would start his annual practice each year saying, "This gentleman is a football." It's like it's going back to the base, Lombardi. Thank you, Alex. It's going back to the very basics. And you're right. They forget all the time. And if you even make mention of that on social media, sometimes there's like quizzical looks that come back. You know, I never even thought about it that way. Well, we should be thinking about it that way because we're the ones that they actually account to. Candace Owens is her name. The book is called Blackout. Real quickly, 2020. We're just less than 60 days away, Candace. I kind of have this feeling that Joe Biden's going to lose, that Trump will retake the House. And if he does, I predict that the Democratic Party, as we know it, is pretty much done for. I think that the Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer wing of the party is going to be out of power. And I think that the new coming is going to be the Rashida Tlaibs and AOC. And I'm just curious, as a contemporary in age and kind of time of life as AOC, you're often propped up in conversation about, well, why can't we get people like Candace running for Congress or setting the tone? And I get what you're doing. You're having a lot of impact through just your platform and what you're doing. And I wouldn't want to say go run for office because I think you're doing better where you are, impacting how people think. But what do you think becomes of the Democrats? Will they fall apart? Will it become a just pure socialist leftist party? And if so, how does that play out over the next few years?
I completely agree with you. I think right now what we're seeing amongst the Democratic Party is a civil war waging between the more moderate Democrats who are capitulating to the far left Democrats. So Chuck Schumer's and Nancy Pelosi's who are playing socialists on TV, but who are not socialists. Nancy Pelosi is worth $300 million. She is not a socialist. But because she's got these radicals in her party that have garnered followers on social media, she's been playing one for TV. And it's not going to benefit her because there is this insurgency that's happening within the party. And we will see Joe Biden will lose. They will do their best to prolong counting the election for days and days and days and saying that they found, you know, mail-in ballots here and mail-in ballots there and Santa dropped off some mail-in ballots on Christmas Day. So we can expect all of that. But in the end, Trump will win and there will be riots and there will be protests because they will say that he didn't win fair and square. Beyond that, the Democratic Party is going to be in complete pieces. And I think what will actually happen is that there will be a dramatic shift in America towards conservatism because all of the moderates who lost their party to these, you know, radically left Democrats are going to go over to the conservative side. I think Trump wins this election and we also secure the future of America for minimally the next decade. And it's all thanks to AOC. So people that hate her, I love AOC. You know, they were thinking it. AOC went out and said it and they got behind her. And now people see exactly what the Democratic Party is all about.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh used to always say, Democrats will never tell you what they truly stand for. They can't. They wouldn't get elected. AOC turned that theory on its head and actually has been reelected. And she's working hard to get others just like her elected as well. But we'll have to discuss that at some other point. Candace, you've been very generous of your time. Please come back to Kevin McCullough Radio. I love what you're doing. I love the fact that so many people identify with you and say, you know what, she may be an African-American female, but she speaks for me regardless of who I am, and just keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to join your show, and I definitely look forward to joining again in the future.
All right. Get the book, Blackout. It's available on the streets September 15th. Of course, you can pre-order now, and that's always helpful for those weird bestsellers lists. How Black America Can Make Its Second Escape from the Democrat Plantation, Blackout, its author, Candace Owens. Candace, thank you so much.